Sunshine Meets on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
Hello, good evening, and you're very welcome to Sunshine Meets. My name is Peter Breen, and over the next hour we'll be chatting to a man best known as one of the greats of Leinster and Argentina rugby, Felipe Contepomi. It's great to have you in the studio. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
So just looking at some of the music and your life, you've had a very interesting career that's taken you to Dublin and back to Dublin with Leinster. But I just firstly wanted to talk about your childhood in growing up in Buenos Aires. Just tell us a bit about that. And you come from a very large family and a very interesting family as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's we are eight siblings, so five brothers and three sisters from mum and dad. And then another four, three boys and one girl, that their parents died, and they were very close to my mom and dad, and they lived with their grandmother, but then they came and lived with us. So it's so we are 12, yeah. We call 12 brothers, yeah, yeah.
You obviously played with Manuel for Los Pumas. What was that like? Because I suppose it's something you can relate to, the Carneys and the Burns at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny. Manuel is my twin brother, and I always say when you play in your national side, you play with the best players. But having the chance, and sometimes you become lucky, and you become friends, and you make friends. I think I was very, very lucky, because it's quite unusual to play with a twin brother, you know, and we were lucky. We played three World Cups together, and we played a few years together. So it was a great experience. Above all, we are very good friends. So we also argue a lot on the pitch, or we discuss, or we were quite frantic, you know, our discussions inside the pitch, but I think at the end of the day we always look for each other, and we, you know, we were real brothers.
did that give you a bit of a glimpse into what the childhood growing up kicking each other around the field or outside the park when you were growing up as well?
Oh yeah, and also we are 6 and 7 in the family, so imagine our eldest brothers will use us as a ball if they need to, you know. They'll kick us all day long, and we thought we could play with them, and so their friends, we basically were the mascots for those when they were growing, when they were teenagers and we were young, we were child, so we used to play in the backyard, and yeah, soccer, rugby, everything.
It's unusual for when you talk about Argentinian number 10s, everyone thinks of Diego Maradona or now Lionel Messi, but you went down the other path, and I suppose your father would have been a big influence in you taking up rugby.
Yeah, the number 10 jersey in Argentina, it's a big one. It's a big one. And in rugby, you know, we had Porta and Hugo Porta and some others, great number 10s as well. And yeah, the way I got into rugby, it was... not my dad, obviously, big influence. He played rugby. He played for the national team before they were called the Pumas, so a long, long time ago. But also the school where I went to. I went to a Christian Brothers school, an Irish school, and the main sport was rugby, and that's how I got into rugby, really, you know. And it was great. I think it was... I've always said I've been very, very lucky in my life, and one of the lucky things was to have the education that I've got, that I've received, not only at home with my mom and dad and all my brothers, but also in school, in the Christian Brothers School in Cardinal Newman, and all the possibilities that I've been given, you know.
In the next segment about your... venture into medicine, obviously, but I just want to ask, were you very academic then? Were you, like, was it clear at that stage that you were going to carve out a career in professional rugby, or were you solely focused on becoming a medical professional?
I've said rugby has changed a lot in the last 20 years, and when I was a teenager and when you were deciding what you wanted to be, professional rugby wasn't a job or wasn't a real in my view. So I always, I was quite convinced, and I wanted to be a doctor. So I went straight after school into medical school, and then rugby, the opportunity of playing professional rugby came, and I took it, but it wasn't really planned, or it wasn't like a dream from when I was a kid to be professional rugby player, because it doesn't exist it really, and it wasn't even. And actually, when I took the professional pathway, it wasn't really well seen in Argentina, so it was a tough decision also to make. But I remember my dad being supportive, and the people around me very supportive, and that was a big relief, you know, in terms of the when you have a good support, and then it's, you know, it's easier to make decisions.
It's interesting when you speak to people who, like yourself, who've made it on the international stage as a sports person, but you're not even the most famous cantapomi in your house. Your eldest brother is a priest, but your Bebe is a big personality as well in the music scene.
I think depending where you go, if you go to a shanty town in Buenos Aires, probably they'll know the priest and Bebe because of his famous, he's on TV. And in music, you know, that is very popular. But it's not about fame. I think one thing that I really learned and appreciate from my parents is that we are a big family, and no one really did or studied the same as the other one. And that's because our parents really allow us to follow our dreams, follow what we wanted to be, and do it, you know. And for Bebe, the rock journalist, it was, I wouldn't say an easy path, because obviously he was coming from a middle class family, going into an ambience or a world where there wasn't that many middle class people, you know, the underground rock and roll where he started, and knowing all the. And he made a great career of himself because he's so passionate for that is something that we got from our parents, you know.
We talked about football and you inheriting that famous number 10 jersey, but Diego Maradona, I know, was an icon for you and for not just Argentinians, but for people all over the world. Did you ever meet him?
Yeah, I think it's a sport icon for us, you know. There's a lot of things outside football that I wouldn't personally agree with Diego, you know, but definitely the thing he did inside the pitch were unbelievable. And I met him 2-3 times, but you know, I know he's got a drug problem, and he's got problems with his life, and sometimes I'd rather have him as a player and have the image of him doing what he did inside the pitch. And when I met him, it was he's very charming, and you know, it's a real nice guy, but you need to understand where he comes from. And oh, you know, literally when there was no social media, when you couldn't, he was the king of the world, and it became, and from where he came, or where he was born, and where he got, you know, it's a lot to take, and I can understand how things derailed a bit in terms of what I would think it's a more healthy life, but he's a real icon, you know, sport icon.
Just talking about your first choice of song, it's Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan. Why did you choose that one?
For me, as I said, I've got a big influence from my music from my brother, and he listens a lot of rock and roll or rock and Argentinian rock, but also international rock. And for me, Bob Dylan is the godfather of any good musician. He's the best one, or the number one, for what I would say. And I always said, like that song, for me, it's a beautiful lyrics, and so it's I always say it's like when I'm past, you can bury me and with this song, and I'll be more than happy. You know, it's like it's an anthem for me.
Sunshine Meets on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
Hello, and you're very welcome back to Sunshine Meets. We're here with Felipe Contepomi, Heineken Cup winner in 2009, and recently was part of the coaching team who won the Pro 14 at Leinster, having returned as backs coach. So, Felipe, you're very welcome back. We're now going to chat about your first move to Leinster. But just to give a bit of background to it, you'd played with Bristol for a couple of years, and unfortunately you were relegated, but that presented an opportunity to move to Dublin.
Yeah, but I played 3 years in Bristol, but the truth is that even before we got relegated that year, I was already moving from Bristol because I wanted... The truth is, I had 3 years playing professional rugby, and I put on hold my medical career. So, I wanted to go back to finish my medical career. So I was ready to go home or whatever, do whatever I had to do to finish. And that's when the opportunity came from Leinster. I came to Leinster and obviously I finished my medical career in the RCSI, in the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. So, yeah, it was a great combo to do, you know. So, yeah, I had no doubts.
you had mentors as coaches. Obviously, Michael Checa had arrived by that stage. But off the field, Professor Arthur Tanner, the late Arthur Tanner, would have been a big influence as well.
Yeah, definitely. He was. I still remember him when we played in the 2002-03 season. We played Leinster Bristol, and when we played the away, Leinster played the away game. He came to my home. I was living in Bristol to see the night before, to see what I had done and this and that, and he was kind of the contact that I had moving into the College of Surgeons, and then he made things, and he was always been a I always say it was my second father, you know, because I used to talk a lot of things of life, of decisions, and as I said before, you know, having my dad in Argentina and far away, and sometimes you have to make decisions, and having a good support or someone to speak to and to listen and I think it's worth it, and Arthur was that person for me, you know.
In January 2006, Leinster played the Border Reavers in Donnybrook. Probably a nondescript game, not many people remember it, but you got 22 points, but crucially, Catalina was born that morning, so I think your iconic statue went for very highly with the Leinster support.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that, you know, I've enjoyed what I was doing. Playing rugby was something then, and I was delighted with my daughter being born, but I couldn't do anything, you know, about that, and I was rested enough to be able to play, and the game was in Donnybrook, was in here in Dublin, so I just played, you know. It came that then I scored a few points, but maybe it's the adrenaline of what you're going through, and also the you know, we had a good team and we had a good performance. And I remember Cech after the game celebrating. He made a small celebration for the whole team because of the new arrival. And yeah, but it was good memory.
When you look back on your time as a player with Leinster, what are the memories that spring to mind with you firstly? Is it about success, or is it about that sense of camaraderie and friendship?
It's, you know, when you play professional rugby, you want to you play for success and so on. But for me, we first have to define what is success for one or the other one. You know, for some people it's just winning, and for me it's a bit more than that. It's just, it's not only winning, it's just going further from that and just making sure that you play or you get to your potential or as close as your potential, you know. It's being the best you can be, and in terms of that team, I remember Leinster, when I arrived, it was early stages of professionalism, and we had a great team, but I've seen in my 6 years a big change in how Leinster went from being a good club rugby and to be a good professional rugby to that could win a Heineken Cup, you know. And definitely it all, when you're part of that transition, is more the way you've been, or the travel that meant that those 6 years, rather than only the success of the 2009 Heineken Cup, you know. So for me, the success, it was all the pathway that we went through, all the ups and downs, and there were a lot of downs, but that make us a better team, you know. And if you ask me about success, that's the success for me for Leinster. It's not just winning, you know. And in those way, when you learn to fight, to play for each other, to really create a culture and have a culture, undoubtedly you'll start getting friends, you know. Because when you have tight and strong bonds, they last forever. But you could be in a team that they win, they could call themselves successful, but it's just because, but you don't have any bonds, and it all blows away, and you left out with nothing, you know. Rather than my 6 years in Leinster as a player, I made a lot of friends, and definitely, yeah, we were successful at the end. We won the Heineken Cup, but it's more all those years that I went through that I call them, for me, that was the real success, you know.
Just about life in Dublin then, how did you manage to balance a medical professional training to become a doctor with being a father, with being a professional rugby player? Three very demanding roles in themselves.
Yeah, I think that one thing that has Irish rugby or the provinces here, and they are quite good in terms of making sure that, not that the guys study, or but that they have something beside and not only rugby. And I think that when you have something that really it's your passion apart from rugby, and that you can do, and that you can spend time outside of rugby, undoubtedly it makes you a better player, because the time you dedicate for rugby, you make it precious, you know. While if you only have rugby, you might be... I always remember that sometimes I could see some guys, players, that for them it was just about waiting for the day or the training session to finish, because then they go home. And for me it was, I don't want to finish ever, because that's when I most enjoy, like playing rugby and being there outside on the pitch training. Because if not, I had to go and study, you know. So it made it...
You sound like a seven-year-old.
It made it really interesting. Like, I think I got the most out of every rugby session, because I was really focused and wanted to be there, you know. And I think it's not a coincidence that when I look backwards, my rugby career, my best years in rugby were from 04 to 09. And there were the years that I was studying or working as a doctor and playing rugby, because there's definitely a mental factor. It's a balance, though, no? There's also a physical factor that you have to manage and make sure that you get it right, because it's very demanding physically, and you need to rest, you need to have the hours of sleep and so on. But yeah, I think it was a great combination.
And every day, I suppose, when you were going into, I think, Beaumont Hospital at the time, that would give you a great reality check as well. So even if you felt maybe down or whatever else, you're looking at the reality of what people are going through every day.
Yeah. You can see that's, you know, it's that's about individual. If you want to see the realities, you can still see them. You don't have to be a doctor or go into a hospital to see reality in life, you know. But definitely, like, if you have something that can move you, or if you have a passion, you know, it's you're capable of doing a lot of things, you know. The more things you have, the more time you have, definitely.
Your next song is an interesting one because it's, you know, it probably sums up your rugby personality, I would say. It's Sympathy for the Devil by Rolling Stones. So off the field, you're a very placid man, very calm man, but on the field sometimes, very spicy. but obviously it's one of the great songs as well.
Yeah, well, for me, it's the Rolling Stones are the best group or rock and roll group that and really, really admirable. You know, we can argue the Beatles, Rolling Stone, whatever, but I think the Rolling Stone, they are still rolling. So that's unbelievable, you know. And when you see even Mick Jagger and the different personalities, and that's what you see them, and you see Charlie Watts and Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, they have nothing to do one to each other, but they are great together. So that's exactly what's life about, you know, making sure that we can all live in the same space and respect each other, you know.
But the great teams and the great groups are often different personalities that just come together, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
Good evening and welcome back to the final segment of our interview with Leinster and Argentina great Felipe Contepomi. Felipe, before we move on to your last selections of songs, I just want to talk about the rivalries that, I suppose, from an Irish perspective, that are really, I imagine, would be great memories for you as well. And you can talk at Leinster Munster. And that competitiveness, but also Argentina-Ireland. We're coming into World Cup year. Firstly, do you think it's because Argentinians and Irish are so similar that maybe that's why the rivalry was so there?
I think, first of all, there was rivalry because of the situation. You know, they were all decisive games, and it got to be that you always decide the future or your way in a World Cup with Ireland. So it was a tough one. But definitely they're very exciting, or I would say very tough games, because I find that Irish players and Argentinian players are very similar in the sense that they are very passionate, they are very nationalistic, and they will fight for their colours, you know. And so and when two very passionate teams comes together and play each other, you can only have brutal games, you know, in terms of collisions and the way they go. But I think they were great, you know, because and they still are, because Irish rugby is that, maybe that's why I felt so comfortable here, you know, because you can see how the Irish players have played with such a proud and with their heart in every jersey they get in, that it's admirable.
It's funny that the media love to build up the rivalry with you and O'Gara, for instance, at Munster, but there was obviously great respect there.
Definitely. I think Ronan was a great player, and he did a lot of good for Munster and for Ireland. You know, it was definitely one of the best players in Munster jersey and Irish jersey. But sometimes it's the media wants to put it, you know, Contepomi versus O'Gara or this or that. And the truth is, it's not Contepomi versus O'Gara. It's Munster be Leinster, Leinster be Munster, and that's it. And it looked good for the outsider or for the media point of view in terms of trying to create that different styles of rugby and this and that, but it's Munster, Leinster, and it's still the same nowadays, you know, without the players, and they still want to put in now Sexton, Carberry, or it doesn't work like that, you know. It's Munster, Leinster, and it will always be Munster, Leinster, and it will be a huge derby and a great passionate day, great passionate game, because both they feel very proud from where they come from, and that's great to have, you know.
It was probably fitting that, although disappointing for yourself, that your last appearance in a Leinster jersey was Croke Park that day. But certainly what I can remember is you were one of the happiest people at the end of that game and then in the final as well, even though you were obviously injured.
Yeah, but that's what happens. Once you get into a sport like rugby, you know that injuries, unfortunately, are part of the deal, you know. And they come, but for me... Even I've got injured, beating Munster in Croke Park, that semi-final was massive for our belief, for our way, and as I've told you, because we've been there before and we couldn't do it, and we were trashed by Munster in 06. So it's like when you work and you've been on those ups and downs, and when you're in those ups, even if you're injured, like, the team is what matters, you know, and we were going to the final, and that's where we wanted to be, where we dreamt to be, and yeah, then we won it, you know. So it was great.
So at the end of that season in 2009, you moved on to France. You were Toulon for a couple of years and in Stade Francais as well, and reuniting with Michael Checa again. So tell us about that, your time in France before you then went back to play for Cardinal Newman.
France is it's an interesting. You know, I went to France more like for a challenge because I wanted to play the 2011 World Cup, and I was very confident. I needed a challenge and get into my uncomfortable zone. You know, so I went to France, went to Toulon. I got there injured, so that was tough at the beginning because it took me a bit to get into team and play, and then moved to Stade Francais with Checa. Had a great year that year we played with Checa, and we were close to make the playoffs. We didn't make it. We fall just a bit short, but I think it was a great experience. And a different experience from playing rugby in England and then in Ireland, and when you have all those type of experience, it can only make you better in terms of knowledge of where you know. I understood French rugby much better, and I understood things that I wouldn't like if I became a coach, or things that I'd say, oh, maybe there are interesting things, and also to understand how French teams will go or will play or will take certain situations, you know. So it was a great experience, yeah.
You mentioned the World Cup. Obviously, we're coming into World Cup year now. Really, the build-up starts with the end of the season, and it's a huge amount of interest. From your own perspective, how would you sum up your experiences at the World Cup? I imagine it was probably the pinnacle of your career.
World Cups, you know, it's you have to be very lucky to play one World Cup, or you have to feel lucky to play one World Cup. I've been extremely lucky to play four, you know. So, and every World Cup got me in a different situation or in a different way of my career, in a different moment of my career, and they were all different challenges, and they come and a World Cup is a whole experience by itself. So. And it's not only those six, seven games you might play, or four, or three, whatever, if you're out in the pool stages. But it's all the leading to it. It takes 3-4 months that they are very intense. Every day counts. Everything you do counts. Everything, and it's the build up of the previous 4 years, what you've been doing, how the team has been moving, and so it's, they're great experiences. And I think the most important thing, it's you need to enjoy those moments. You know, you need to enjoy the build up. You need to sacrifice, make a lot of sacrifice to go and try to get in the best shape, because it might only happen once, you know, and if it happens. So I think it's a great, great moment for everyone who is preparing for that World Cup, you know.
You'll have a more than interested view in two camps now this year, with obviously with Ireland and the players you're working with now as coach, and obviously Argentina, where you're from.
Thankfully, they don't play each other. So no, but I think it's interesting. I think Ireland, personally, I think they are in a very healthy moment. You know, the Irish rugby. I know World Cups, it's tough, it's different, but getting together, having 2-3 months to work on the different cohesion and patterns and this and that. Ireland has very good players at the moment. So, and it will be tough for every player in that list to get into the starting 15. So it's, and that competition can only make you better, you know. So I think I would fancy Ireland to have a great World Cup, you know. I know it's tough. They are crossing in quarterfinals against a tough pool. Whoever comes out of the other pool, you know, it's New Zealand or South Africa. It's as tough as it can get, you know, for a quarterfinal. But I think, and Ireland proved it in last year, that they can beat anyone, you know. So they'll be, I'm looking for, I think they'll be in good form.
Finally, it was kind of a circuitous nature of life that you moved back to Leinster last summer, and it's thankfully ended with a success, winning the Pro 14. How have you found life as a coach? I know you've been a coach for a couple of years, but is it a role that you've really taken to?
Yeah, I think it's, I find it, obviously it's hard working. It's really, you work really hard, and you need to love this sport to be a coach, because it takes a lot of your time. You basically don't have days off, but it's I really love it, and you know, it's hard sometimes, because I think, and that's the way it has to be, the sport is about the players, and we are only helpers for them to get better. And but we put a lot of work behind the scene to make that happen, or to make them, the players, better. And I think it's great, you know, for me. The last game we won, and we won the Pro 14, seeing the joy of every single player being part of that and getting to that result was great, you know. And that pays for every single minute that I spent watching videos, going and putting the hard work you have to put. You know, it's watching that enjoyment of the players and that gratefulness. Like it was great. It was great.
Just before we finish, your last two songs are very interesting ones. Firstly, you've chosen "Sunday Bloody Sunday" by U2. Were they a band that you would have listened to a lot growing up in the '80s?
Yeah. To be honest, in the '80s, I would. I've got another brother that he used to listen you to a lot. My Bebe used to listen more national rock, but my other brother used to listen a lot of you too. I was more, I remember in the 80s, I would listen to In Excess, but you too would be one of those bands that, you know, I remember listening to them, and I think you judge the good artist after they can be in the scene for 20, 25 years, and U2 has done that and more, you know. And U2 definitely is one of the best bands ever, you know. And maybe a bit biased, because being in Ireland and feeling what they mean, what they represent, it makes me like them even more, you know.
And then finally is Man on the Moon, REM, which I suppose tells the tale of Andy Kaufman, that great comedian from America. But
yeah Yeah, I liked REM, you know, and I think it's a group that, again, artists that they've been through many years playing on the road, and and they, you know, they're one of those groups that maybe they weren't recognized as what I think they should, but they're still great, you know, and that song is a very good song, yeah.
You've been listening to Sunshine Meets with Dr. Felipe Contepomi. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.